Introducing Lewis, Scott, and Films of 1991. Hello, and welcome back to Films of 1991 with me, Lewis, and housekeeping, as always. So, apologies for the tardy episode 5 for All American Murder. Which, if you listen to the last episode, know that this is already a 5-star review. So, but yeah, life happens. I've got the jab. Make sure you all get the jab. And yeah, that's very simply it. I think that's all the housekeeping. I don't think there was anything left over from the last episode. I'm sure there was, but I've completely forgotten. But on with the show. A 5-star review, folks. Exciting. So, All American Murder is directed by Anson Williams. Anson Williams, interestingly enough, I'm gonna be honest. I'm of a certain generation which didn't grow up on watching Happy Days. If you don't know what Happy Days is, it's where the Fonz comes from. So I know who the Fonz is. I know the gist of the show. However, I don't know the ins and outs of every character and whatnot. But the director, Anson Williams, interestingly, was Potsy in Happy Days and also won a Golden Globe for that. So there you go. There's that. and he seems to have directed a lot of TV episodes and shows mainly. But if you go to his Wikipedia, he's had consistent work for years. There's also an interesting thing to do with a financial dispute that him and other cast members raised with Happy Days. Studio, I can't remember what the studio was. Maybe Universal? I can't remember for exact. But that's an interesting read as well. Very intriguing. And also something that I think, I wonder if other TV stars will also deal with that same thing. But anyway, that's besides the point. The cast is Christopher Walken, Charlie Schlatter, Josie Bisset, Joanna Cassidy, Richard Kind, to name most of the cast. It's quite a tight-knit cast. There's a couple of other actors, but those are the main players. So the brief synopsis is an offbeat detective looks into campus mayhem blamed on a judge's son who has a history of pyromania. Right, so, as I said, this is our first 5-star review of films of 1991, and for me, it's with good reason. I love this film. Will always love this film. It's a TV movie / direct to video. It's a little bit suspect, which is depending on what source you go by, but from what I can gather, it's direct to video. Granted, which means, you know, it goes against what I've said before about this just being about feature films. But hey, rules are meant to be broken, right? So there's a few things that you should know about me before we delve right in. So Christopher Walken, as I mentioned, is one of my favourite actors of all time. And along with that, I am a massive Diagnosis Murder fan. Which, if you know your stuff, is the show Charlie Schlatter stars from series 3 onwards. Now, also, if you want to know, if you have no idea what Diagnosis Murder is, it's how do you best explain it? It's one of those early afternoon shows, which, you know, your gran or your granddad would probably watch. I used to always watch it because it would just be right about the time like school would finish. So if I got back in time, I'd be able to watch it. So basically, Dick Van Dyke is a doctor who solves murderous crimes. Basically is what the show is. And it's absolutely excellent. I love it. Tibbetts. The future's banging. Anyway, that's for another day. It's another podcast. But anyway, Charlie Schlatter was very much an integral point, part of that, from series 3 onwards. And in the fact, in this film, you have a replicant from Blade Runner in Joanna Cassidy, who doesn't get a massive amount of screen time, but is excellent when she does. And one of the best sarky actors going, Richard Kind. Honestly, every film I've seen that man in, and I can't, I should have wrote a list of films he's been in, but I've completely forgotten. It's always, he's always playing the sarkiest, smuggiest man you've ever seen. And he does it to a T. He clearly knows what he's there for, what job he's to do, and he does it perfectly. And with all that in mind, you have an absolute classic on your hands, in my humble opinion. The tone shifts wildly in this film, especially from the opening 20 minutes to what comes after. With 90, the year 1991 being so close to the 80s, it has a lot of leftovers, let's say. So this film starts like a John Hughes Rat Pack flick. Also, if you want to know who, if you don't know who John Hughes is, he literally wrote like some of the all-time classics in 80s films. One of them I actually don't really, I actually hate. This is a very controversial opinion. I hate Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I know, shock. But I just cannot jam with that film. For some reason, it just doesn't jam with me at all. But what's interesting, another really interesting point, is that Charlie Schlatter was cast in the Ferris Bueller role for when they adapted it into a TV show in the 90s. So there's a little nugget that you can use in a pub quiz. So anyway, but yeah, so he also wrote Pretty in Pink, 16 Candles, you know, that, you know, like I said, the quintessential Rat Pack 80s films. He also wrote Home Alone and Home Alone 2 and Home Alone 3, which I always think is an absolute banging film, even though people think it's absolute tripe. But anyway, that's all my personal opinions. Back to the film. So it sets up the film perfectly to start, the opening 20 minutes. An oddball outside of the tracks rebel falls in with the cookie cutter cheerleader at a school which is all about the rules, but with secrets to hide. It could have been a film in its own right, but then once that 20 minute mark passes, in enters the man himself, Christopher Walken. Now, we are gonna be seeing Walken a couple times later on. In other films, one of them being King of New York, which I have seen, and the other one which I haven't, which is McBain. So we'll see plenty of Walken. Now, the first time I ever saw Walken in a film was probably A View to a Kill, the James Bond film, in 1985, which was Roger Moore, or Pulp Fiction, obviously Quentin Tarantino's second film, 1994. And I was immediately transfixed. He has natural charisma tied up with his offbeat nature, makes him such an interesting and enjoyable watch. Like A View to a Kill, he's the villain. And I really love A View to a Kill. You've got a Duran Duran theme. It's very, he's got Grace Jones kicking ass. I mean, what more do you want? And also, Christopher Walken's got the bleach blonde look. You know, he's in a blimp, basically. And okay, Roger Moore's not my favourite Bond, but I think it's a really excellent film. A View to a Kill is a really interesting plot, is a bit daft, but hey. And also the Pulp Fiction role, oh my days. When he's telling to camera the story about a watch being up, if you haven't seen Pulp Fiction, a watch being up an ass in Vietnam, it's only he could tell a story and it'd be as good as it was. So the way he's introduced as Detective Decker, that's his character, via a police hostage negotiation is excellent. You immediately get the sense that he knows what he's doing, alongside the fact that he's a bit of a rebel in an institutional construct. From there, we get into the main story. Having seen this twice, I know the twist at the end. And with that, I was able to pick up on the clues more than I did the first time around. However, that being said, I still think it's done in a layered enough way, which is not too obvious. It keeps you guessing, which in a college set murder mystery is vitally important. When as a writer and/or director, you make the choice to keep the perpetrator a secret. And I have a big thing about that because as a kid, it's like a side note, as a kid, it depends how it's done, but I used to hate Columbo. Now I know that's all, you know, it is an excellent show, but as a kid, I used to really, 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 really dislike the idea that the perpetrator, the killer, the murderer was shown. It was you saw them first, and then the whole time you're just watching this guy eventually get to the culprit. I remember as a kid being like, why am I even bothering? We already know who it is. And I'm just supposed to sit here and watch this guy eventually get to it. Because at Columbo, he's always going to end up getting it, isn't he? It's like that other show, I don't know, odd references, Drop Dead Diva. Literally, in every episode, she wins her... it's a legal-based comedy drama, I guess is the genre. It's a daft show, but I remember we would watch it and it would always be like, she's solving every case, every single episode. So there's no real point in us watching the show. Because at the end of the day, we know she's going to win because she always wins. And it's the same with this. But anyway, you know, I'm a bit more mature, so I understand the idea that it's about showing how Columbo figures it out. It's about the way he does things, the way he figures it out. I get that. But that being said, the film is an hour and a half long and it whizzes by. It knows, and I mean, I'm guessing it would have to have a time limit because of it being direct to video. I can't imagine that they were allowed to do, you know, an opus of like 5 hours on the thing. But anyway, it knows what it needs to do and what fat to trim. But it doesn't sacrifice style or character development for runtime. It was impressive. That's impressive, sorry, for a direct-to-video movie. And believe me, I have watched a lot of TV movies and direct-to-video movies, and they all blend into one, with a few exceptions, of course. I won't get into that because that's a long-ass list, but trust me, I've seen a lot. You know, those was their daft titles like, one was called Double Mommy. That's actually a really dark one. It was a bit icky. What's another one? Films like Martha's Vineyard. Was it A Beautiful Place to Die? Something like that. With Jesse Metcalf, remember him? So films like that. So I've seen my fair share. So I know what I think I'm talking about. But anyway, moving on. So the dialogue in this is both natural and zany. As well as being packed with so many one-liners, I'm surprised this wasn't a comedy special. Like, it is crazy. I mean, again, the first time I watched it, I probably didn't pick up on as many, but literally, the second I viewed it, it was like every other line was just hitting so hard. I was having the time of my life. I mean, the scriptwriter must have just, when they wrote the script, they must have just been like, look, let's just have a ball. We've got Christopher Walken, for God's sake. You know, he's done, because as we'll get to eventually, King of New York is a much more serious film. And by looks of what McBain is, also the same sort of chap. So they must be like, look, you know, he's you know, willing to do this direct-to-video film. He's done, you know, two very serious projects. Let's just give him the time of his life where he could just go off. They're like, yeah, all right. And everyone else could join in, you know. And there's moments where characters snap back and forth in the way they deliver. And other times where they take their time and offer explanation of what they're saying. As opposed to an earlier reviewed film, Homicide, where it seems like everyone talks in the exact same manner. And that's my... Sorry, I've got some nasal issues, so apologies for the sniffing. But that's my main... criticism of Homicide, my main praise for All American Murder, is the way that people talk. In All American Murder, like I said, it differs, again, between each character, when different characters interact with other different characters, there's a certain way that we as people interact. You meet person A at a party, and you interact one way. You meet person B at a party, and you'll react a different way. You might act the same, generally, but in the way you speak to them, it might be completely different. Whether you slow things down, explain more, whether it's loud, quiet, what have you. And that's how we as humans interact. Whereas in Homicide, it is like everyone talks the same, everyone keeps repeating the same way over and over again, and that's how it is. End of story. I was like, well, no, that's not how humans interact. If we all did that, I mean, I don't even know. I think we'd all probably be in the Matrix, probably. But anyway, besides the point. Let's talk about our main lead, Charlie Slatter, who is a revelation here. Now, as I said before, I know him from Dinos and Murder, which is as much about murder as I said is strictly an early afternoon TV affair. So it's not gratuitous, let's say. There's some dark episodes. I mean, look, it's going to be dealing with some heavy stuff anyway, but it's not, you know, like, come on, I was watching it when I was like 12 or 13, and I could, you know, it wasn't like scary. There was one episode, but that is again for another day. And so he's basically playing, he just gets to show his full range. That's what I'll say. Charlie Slatter. In All American Murder, he gets to flex acting muscles that he never got to do in Dinos and Murder. He plays the rebel with a conscience really well here, and also doesn't fall into the too pouty rich kid trap of acting. Considering he's supposed to be the son of a judge, you know, he's understanding of his privileged position, but at the same time, he doesn't really want it. And then there's like a third element, which I can't really put my finger on, but it just works. Him and Walken bounce off each other perfectly. There's an especially great bit where Walken tells a story to Schlar. Now, I won't tell the story. You watch that for yourself. Now, we've already heard him, Walken, tell the story to two colleagues, one of them being Richard Kind, I forget what the other guy's called. Just apologies to him. However, when he tells it this time to Charlie Schlatter's character, the ending is different. And it's told to portray a different message than when he told it with his colleagues. This is a great use of dialogue used to further and build a relationship. And that's exactly what I mean when I was talking about Homicide. With Homicide, I kept being like, I don't understand. Why are they always talking the same exact way to everybody? I keep repeating the one line 5 times, sometimes more, and in the same tone, and in the same manner. It's not really getting me anywhere. It's not really developing the ideas that they're trying to portray, or the relationship we're trying to portray between each character. Whereas with this, I get, right, so Christopher Walken tells a story to his two colleagues, but he tells it in a way which they'll understand. Whereas with Slatter, he tells it in a way where he'll understand, and maybe that's what actually the true story is, because of the way Walken delivers it and ends it on a different note. Maybe that was actually the real, you know, quote-unquote, real story at the end of the day, and that the one he told earlier to his colleagues, he fabricated some of it or left a bit out because he knew they would understand. So again, you all that going on just through the means of speaking and the use of words and the delivery. So that's what I'm talking about. It builds these relationships between characters, you know, understand. They become three-dimensional people. You know, that's massively important. So I guess, I mean, this is a 5-star review, so there really shouldn't be, but I guess the one or two gripes I have with this is, this is a daft one, but I wish I had a sequel. There's enough there to spin off and make something new. And also to show off Schlatter's full range as an actor. So previous to this, I think he had mainly made his name in being in the original 18 Again, which they did a remake with Zac Efron and Chandler from Friends. What the heck is his name again? Matthew Perry. But yeah, Charlie Schlatter was the original 18 Again with George Burns in the elder statesman role. And after that, he did Diagnosis of Murder, he also did this. He did a lot of voice acting. He still does a lot of voice acting now. But I just wish that there. I mean, even now, I would be happy for there to be a sequel now. I think it would still be a great idea. I think there's a lot there. There's a lot there. And also, I just got the impression that you could make it so they're a team now, Walken and Schlatter. I just think there's actually a lot more there. Also, the message it puts across as well, to do with being at college and what does it mean and what does it mean to be a certain type of person there and the pressures that it bestows on people and the expectations of what that can do to people. Like, there's all this going on at the same time. Like, it's not just a straight down the line affair. And I want to give a quick shout out to the practical effects used in one scene. It's in one scene, but let's just say somebody gets what they deserve in the most explosive way. We actually don't see the act itself, but we see the before and the aftermath. And in the aftermath, the practical effects staging is absolutely perfect. And that's a different flavor to the rest of the film. So the rest of the film is like very much, character driven. There's some like minor action spots and stuff. Anyway, there's some scenes of like expressive use of the set, but in that one scene towards the end, I'm telling you, it is like holy crap. It's just great. It's just great. It looks like it's actually from a different film. And I should say actually, that the reason that it whizzed by, I forgot to mention, the reason it whizzed by was as part of the plot, there's an element of a time limit. That's what I was actually meaning by that, but I got confused by my thoughts. And there's a time limit built into the storyline, which is used really well to further on the story. Hence why it's able to keep a short runtime, because he's like, well, such and such is in a hurry. But I'm not going to give it away, you know me, no spoilers. So yes, I loved it. All of this is subjective, no doubt. But I had a rollicking good time. And if you want a mystery with a dash of fun and weird, then this is the film for you. So now to best lines. It's that time of the show, the time of the day, folks. So best lines. Now, there are so many, as I mentioned, so I've picked two. So the first is Christopher Walken's character, Decker. And this is literally as he's being introduced in his hostage negotiation at the start. And he gets a megaphone. He gets a megaphone. And he's basically trying to rile the guy up who's in the fuel station. That was called petrol station, Christ. And he's basically goading him by talking about his better half who's there. I can't remember what her name is. But he's basically making out that he's had an intimate affair with his missus, right? So at some point he goes like, I'm not going to do an impression. I used to try doing walking impressions, but they're awful, so I don't want to do that. But basically, at one point, he goes, I always remember a face, especially if I've sat on it. Come on, that's incredible. I was like, if you watch this one for the first time and just sat there, and all of a sudden he just says that, what are you supposed to do with that? I was like, what? I was like, all right, fair dude. I thought that was excellent. And then the other line that I pulled is by Richard Kind. So he plays Lou, who's one of Walker's colleagues. And they're talking about Schlatter's character's rap sheet, about how he apparently pissed on the science teacher. Well, he pissed on the science teacher's, and Walker's question whether he sat, if he whether he pissed on the science teacher or he pissed on somebody in science. So Richard Kind's character replies, "If you piss on somebody, you piss on somebody." Again, very simple, straight to the point. All right, okay, fine, good to know. If I piss on somebody, I piss on somebody. And yeah, but like I said, there's so many. But best scene. So I'm going with a weird one. I mean, what else would I go with? Walken is chatting with his colleagues. So Richard Kind, and I forget the other guy, I really feel bad, and proceeds to walk outside the station and shoot hoops. That's right, basketball. If it were any other actor, it would have never worked. But it just fits perfectly with Walken. So yeah, there's apparently a basketball hoop on the outside of the police station, on the wall. And he just comes out, dribbles, oh, talks about him. I think he's a shooting guard or a point guard. You know basketball positions, you know what that means. Anyway, he's just, yeah. It's just like, what? It just seemed, it came out right out of nowhere. But we'll finish with the numbers. So because it was direct to video, there was no financials. So apologies. However, I can give you this little nugget. It was made in 22 days. In 22 days. Sorry, I'm flipping my book up. I was so excited. 22 days. I don't know the average length of time for making a film. But if you think about it, you film, say your film is scheduled is like a month. Maybe 2 months. But think about it, pre-production before that. You're scouting for locations, casting, all that shit back. And the post-production is editing, special effects, CGI, marketing, you know. That's like a year. They made this film in 22 days, and it's an absolute stone cold banger. Incredible. However, if you go by the ratings, on Rotten Tomatoes, it has 22%. For Google users, it has 67%, so a little bit better. You know, that's all right. That's pretty all right. And on IMDb, 5 out of 10, so 50%, right down the middle. But apparently, according to Rotten Tomatoes, oh, it was hated. It was not liked at all. But I loved it. I loved it. So that's all, folks. Thanks so much again for listening and for taking the time to listen to other episodes. I can see people are doing that. And if all goes to plan, next time out, it'll be our first sequel of Films of 1991. FX2, The Deadly Art of Illusion. Oh, it's going to be a treat. And like I said, as always, take care, stay safe, get your jabs, protect yourself and others. And thanks again. I'll see you on the flip side. Cheerio!
Thanks for listening to Films of 1991. Come back again.